You're listening to the Hustle Inspires Hustle podcast. Here, we'll help you unlock the secrets of entrepreneurship and self-development. This is your host, Alex Quinn. I'm a full-stack marketing executive and global keynote speaker. Get ready to get real-world knowledge from top-level entrepreneurs and world-class business leaders.
Hey guys, Randy Zuckerberg here.
Hi everyone, it's Neil Patel, and you're listening to Hustle Inspires Hustle.
This is the motherfucking CEO, Andy Frisella. You're listening to Hustle Inspires Hustle with Alex Quinn.
Become an authority and thought leader in your niche. Join a free private community of entrepreneurs and professionals looking to grow their business and optimize their performance. Get easy to learn resources and materials that empower your personal and financial success. Easily accessible for free on desktop and mobile app. Go to hustleinspireshustle.com/app to access now. That's hustleinspireshustle.com/app. Enjoy the rest of the episode. What's going on, everyone? This is Alex Quinn, and you're listening to the Hustle Inspires Hustle podcast. Today, we're in Miami at More Play Studios with Jesse Terrero. What's up, Jesse?
What's up? What's going on?
Bro, we've been looking forward to having you on this podcast for a while. It's the first podcast in a long time that we do in person, so we're honored to have you here, man. And most importantly, happy birthday, bro.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And I'm happy to be here too, man. It's good to finally be able to do stuff in person as well.
Right? Last year was crazy, but now we all have a chance to really make the best out of the entertainment space and all the opportunities we have here as Latinos, as creators in Miami, in the hub right now of music and entertainment, I'd say.
Yeah, no, it's incredible how Miami has grown. And, you know, with all where Latin music is right now and all the artists kind of flooded Miami, it's, you know, the energy here is incredible.
It is. And bro, let's rewind a little bit, you know, for people that are just finding out about here on the podcast. You have an incredible track record in entertainment industry, and you've honestly been making huge strides in the game. But let's take it back to the 90s, right? Shit. Let's take it back to the 90s, because this is what really blew me away. I've watched a ton of your interviews, and I really wanted to get to know you more. I found out about you through Rich Music. I started to see a lot of the content you were doing with Rich Music, started watching all the episodes, and I was blown away, bro. You were an actor in 92. Like you were on a Pac film. You're an extra. How was that?
Growing up, I grew up in the South Bronx. Then we moved to Jamaica, Queens, and it just wasn't anything that you thought about being, right? So you didn't think about being a filmmaker. You didn't think about being an actor. And my mom, at one point, you know, our neighborhood was so bad that, you know, she went to work in the morning. My father worked at night. So sometimes it was like the ships that crossed at night. So there was a gap of time where they weren't home. So then my mother bought a camera and she was like, look, you can't go in the streets when we're not here. Entertain yourselves, right, until she gets home. So we started making all these home movies. And that's where, like, the love of, like, filmmaking started to come, but we didn't know it was realistic. And then on this channel called Video Music Box, it was the only channel then that showed music videos. They had, like, some announcement that they were looking for extras for this film. Now, Tupac wasn't a star. So it wasn't like we went there thinking, oh, there's stars in the film. So we went there, and it was kind of more like as a joke or with our friends. And, you know, maybe there's a lot of girls there. We just kind of went to hang. A lot of Latinos didn't come out for it. And there was a crew in the movie that had beef with Tupac's character that was supposed to be a Latin gang. So the director took a liking to me and my brother, and then, you know, they put us in the film as extras. So for me, going on that set is what changed my life, because when I went on that set, everybody that worked on the set was like Latino or African-American.
Okay.
And then I saw people that were like me working in the film business, which I didn't really, you know, we didn't really have that picture in our mind.
Right.
And then all these kids that the actors in the film all went to the School of Performing Arts. Like, I didn't know that kids went and studied acting in school or music. Like, I wasn't exposed to that. So then I was like, wow, this is interesting. And then, you know, I started pursuing acting, and it was my freshman year in college. And I switched my major and I started studying theater and then studying film. And I always thought I was going to be a director later in life, because all the directors that I saw looked old. So I said, okay, I'm going to act first.
Old heads, yeah.
Yeah, and then I'll be a director later. But, you know, different opportunities started to happen. And I got, you know, my, you know, feet wet sort of acting and doing some TV shows and stuff.
That's incredible, man. Just to see how far back it goes. You're a kid running around with a camera and all the incredible things you're doing now.
Yeah, and it was interesting. But, you know, I remember I was putting a resume together.
right.
from my acting resume. You know, and that was hardcore. I studied in college. I had coaches. You know, I was, you know, trying to respect the art and do it the right way. And I did Law and Order, and I was doing TV shows and little bit parts. And I was putting my resume together. And I was typing it up, and I was like, Drug Dealer 4, like Gangbanger 1, like Thug 2. Like, I didn't even have names. Like, I wasn't
Thug 2.
I wasn't like a Paco or a Sanchez. Like, I had no names. It was all shit stuff like that. Like, Street Guy, Gun Person 2. Like, it was, so I was like, at some point, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine, and I was kind of disappointed, you know, because when you see it in the resume, then it looks bad. When I was getting the parts, it was cool to be Drug Dealer 2.
Yeah, when you're in the mix, when you see it on paper,
I was like, wow. And a lot of my friends in the industry was like, look, man, we need more people behind the camera.
Right.
We need more writers, directors, producers, because that's what's going to change this image of us on the screen. And that's where I started sort of shifting my energy.
Around what age was that?
Ooh, you're going to age me, but yeah, that was like, I would say 26, okay. 27.
All right. And what was your first big film project where like, shit, man, like this shit's getting real. Like, you know, I'm actually doing what I set out to do. I'm in a place where I can make moves. What was that first like?
Yeah, for me, it technically didn't happen like that because, you know, back in those days.
Yeah.
Right. We didn't have phones that you can make a movie on. Like, there wasn't, like, social media where, like, if I just want to put underneath my name, like, I'm a director, then I just have that stamp. Yeah. Like, you actually had to, like, come up a certain way, and the opportunities weren't there because film was so expensive that the average person couldn't shoot film, right? So we did it, you know, I interned on a film, then I PA'd, then I did everything from clean the floor to bring people coffee to do all the stuff I could to be around the business. And when the music video thing started happening in New York, I didn't realize that a lot of directors don't write their concepts. So then I overheard this one director that I was close to, you know, she was on the phone with Puff Daddy and they were beefing because he didn't like any of the ideas. So I overheard the conversation. So then I told her, I said, hey, I think I know exactly what he means. That's why he didn't like your idea or this other director's. And she was like, what the fuck do you know? And I was like, yeah, I'm just telling you, I think I know what he means. And she goes, if you're so good, why don't you write the concept?
I bet, let's roll.
So I wrote it. And it was for a DMX record with the Lox. It was called Money, Power, Respect.
Yeah.
And I submitted the idea to her. She submitted it, and she got the video, right? So then she was like, oh, wow, maybe this kid knows what's happening, right? So then her production company at the time now started sending me music. Wu-Tang, this, that, Mariah Carey. And I started writing concepts. And she was one of the biggest music video directors at the time, right? So that, for me, was the big shift because now people started looking at me as an idea guy, right? So they was like, and I was getting all this music and I was writing these treatments and I saw my concepts come to life.
Yeah.
So at some point I was like, I'm getting $500 for this idea and she's getting a ton of money. These videos were like millions of dollars.
Right. Yeah, of course.
And I was like, oh, I got to learn how to do this. And you know.
That's where it starts.
That's where it starts.
It's incredible. And it's really cool to see that you started literally from all the way at the bottom. And you also went to school for it too. Like you took that shit serious. You're like, I want to do this with my life. And a lot of people don't do that and then wonder why things don't work out for them. And you got to take your craft seriously, bro. Like really seriously.
Yeah, what I tell people, look, I think this era, there's so much access that kids are super smart and they're very progressive in the way they think. But I tell them, I said, if you don't lay the bricks the right way, you know, when the storm comes, the house is going to fall apart. And I feel a lot of these kids don't have the foundation to survive. Because, you know, filmmaking, you could be a music video director, but that doesn't prepare you to do TV.
Mm.
You can shoot TV, that might not prepare you to do a film, right?
Right.
So the mediums are so different that people, you know, I feel like there's a lot of people that their careers don't survive.
Yeah.
You know, and they can get lucky doing a couple of music videos, but doesn't make a full career, right? So
right.
I'm happy that I was able to do it the right way.
Yeah. You get your feet wet first. You understand the business. Mm-hmm. You understand how to work with people. You understand how to do everything correctly. Mm-hmm. Then you dive in. And bro, it seems like you're very strategic with the way you do everything because look, you started off, you know, in front of the camera, right? Wanting to, you know, you start off with the camera creating, then you got in front of the camera. Then you understood that you wanted maybe to be behind the camera running business or creating concepts and ideas. You work in music videos, which you've been extremely successful in with music videos. You've worked with a ton of incredible artists, guys. Maluma, you've worked with Marc Anthony. I could name a ton of people. And now you've transitioned that into being able to become a staple in the film industry, but you've gone through your processes. You've understood those processes. I'm guessing you've understood your strengths, your weaknesses, and you've allowed yourself the time to get to where you are right now.
Yeah, you know, it's a journey, it's a fight, you know?
Yeah.
And you think that you reach a certain level and you still don't got to fight. You know, whenever you're trying to sell projects that star people that look like us, it's not easy. And then, you know, people call you because they feel like you have your hand on pop culture, you understand what people are going to like, and then they try to change that. And that's the hardest thing. It's like they was like they want what you're selling, but then when they buy it, they try to destroy it.
They try to make it their own, and it's not what they were looking for anymore. It's they're trying to make it theirs.
And then if you fail, they blame you, right? So, so you know, these days, I try to sort of take as much control as I can. And that's really my goal is, you know, I'd rather fall on my own face,
right?
But, you know, when I built my company, Cinema Giants, that's what it was about, right? It's like, yes, we do all types of stuff at Cinema Giants, right? But, you know, my focus is Latino, right? Because I feel that we lack content, right? So there's not enough content. Like, even when they did the audit at Netflix, they realized that we were had the least amount of content on Netflix, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where the growth is. And I think that that's where my focus is.
Yeah.
Hey, I just wanted to jump in real quick to tell you about how to train yourself in organization, balancing your priorities, developing successful habits, and most importantly, having a better mindset. I'm giving free access to resources and materials on business management and self-development. Go to hustleinspireshustle.com/app to get access. That's hustleinspireshustle.com/app. Make sure to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter at Hustle Inspires Hustle. Okay, let's get back into the episode.
Honestly, man, I had been aware of a lot of your work because I've always been big on music. I've always loved music videos. When I was growing up, I would watch MTV, 106 in Park, The Basement, all these shows. I was always on it. I would watch the music videos. I would put them together. I would study the lyrics. So I've always been understanding of the space. But when I really became a fan of your work was with El Ganador. Why? Because nobody had taken a risk to do some shit like that, especially with Netflix, right? When I saw the trailer, I was like, who the hell is behind this? I went and saw Cinema Giants, had already ran into some of your work through Rich Music and had been here. I saw you guys, you know, were around. And that's where it really blew my mind. That's where I was like, okay, Jesse's onto some shit right now. Because, dude, you took over music videos, you won billboards, you won MTV awards, you did all that, but you've always, I guess, had your vision on the way bigger picture, which is, let's take this shit all the way, right?
Yeah, because for me, it's like I had, like, a lot of lives, right? So then I had, like, my first life as an actor, then I had my life as a director of music videos on the urban side.
Right.
Right, so, you know, 50 Cent was my biggest client. You know, me and 50 did, like, 25 music videos from Wangs to the Candy Shop, so, like, when I was doing those hip-hop videos, MTV did me TRL, right? So they started putting hip-hop videos and Latin videos in the same countdown. Okay. So I started watching Aventura against NSYNC. I started watching these different videos, and the quality of the work of the videos didn't match the general market.
Mm.
So it started bothering me, right? So then I used to complain a lot about it, and somebody said, you can either continue to complain or you can be part of the change. You got to make that decision.
Right.
So I was like, oh, wow, I'm going to take a pay cut, you know, because these Latin videos are not paying. But I started, like, ingratiating myself in that market with the knowledge of the general market. So I said, you know what? If I could do it in the general market, I could do it here. And I started working with Yankee. I did stuff with Don Omar. And then when I met Wisin Yandel, the Looney Tunes called me, like, to do a favor. Like, we're Dominican, too. And they hit me with the Dominican favor. I said, all right, cool. We're going to go do this video, Los Benjamins. But when we did it, I met Wisin Yandel. When I met them, they wanted me to do a video, and I was like, look, I'm not really big right now doing these one-offs, but if I can do more than one video, I feel like I really create impact, right? So they were like, you could do them all, and then we went on the run and did like 17 videos, right? Yeah. And Abusador, Sexy Movimiento, we were just, at a time that we're becoming gigantic.
Killing it, bro. Yeah.
But I felt that helped change the visual, because now these kids weren't like these ghetto kids from Puerto Rico anymore. They looked like pop stars, right?
Yeah.
And it started helping the genre. So as the genre was growing, I remember doing a video for Wisin Yandel, and I was like, you know, people don't understand how big you are. Like, yeah, I try to explain to people, and I say, hey, they sold out two nights at Madison Square Garden. And the rapper would be like, no, they didn't. Not by themselves. And they would call me back 10 minutes later. I just called Madison Square Garden. They sold out. I said, yo, I told you. Aventura just did four nights at Staples Center by themselves. So at that time, most rappers were on tour together, a bunch of them. They weren't headlining like that.
Yeah.
And these kids, because the music was in Spanish, they were crushing it. But but people didn't understand. So when I try to sell projects like Nicky Jam, then nobody saw it.
We don't worry, yeah.
And they were like, okay, the music's in Spanish, we don't get it. And I'm like, yeah, but they're sending out arenas in the US, right? So it wasn't until the streamers came along that they started saying, okay, the top 10 videos on YouTube this year, 8 of them happen to be reggaeton. So I started pushing the agenda and I saw how hip hop changed cinema for the African Americans because it got so big that it forced them to have to make content that felt like the music. And that's where I started saying, you know what, reggaeton is just as big. It's America's new hip hop.
It is.
And I started pushing that agenda. And finally, Netflix was the right partner because they were brave enough to take the chance. But we talked to a bunch of people and they weren't brave. They didn't think it would work. You know?
I'm glad they took the chance, bro, because Nicky's story was impactful. But I think it's also impactful for people to understand that you don't always have to follow the status quo. I think the way your career developed in an era where hip hop was so special in the United States, where it started becoming mainstream, and that influence of hip hop and R&B bleeding over into reggaeton, and then you being able to move into the Spanish industry after having that experience, bringing all of that experience of working mainstream over here, and then being able to develop this, I think more people should know about it. And I think more people should engage with it. I think more people should take risks like that. And I think that's why so many people look up to you in the space, specifically people who are directors, young directors, filmmakers, people that see, hey, this guy did it, I could do it too, man. Like, he took such a big risk and, you know, it paid off.
And then, look, I think for me, that's what I hope, right?
Yeah.
I hope that the same way I walked on that set and I saw people that looked like me, I hope that people are watching me on television or they're hearing me talk or they're seeing things that I've done and it inspires them, right? Because that's what it's about. You know, if it wasn't for hip hop, I wouldn't exist, right? Because that door wasn't being opened for directors like me.
Yeah.
But it was Puff Daddy, it was Jay-Z, it was guys like that that got empowered that say, hey, how come the directors don't look like us?
Right.
And they started empowering directors of color, right? So a lot of times what I try to do, and I'm not saying that I alienate anybody out, but I try to empower us because I feel like we need that empowerment.
Absolutely,
because
yeah.
Sometimes in our culture, and I'm seeing it happen in reggaeton, they always feel like they get something better on the Anglo side. So when they start hitting a certain height in their career, they want to go Anglo.
Exactly.
And then I start getting these calls from the record labels going, hey, do you got directors at your company that don't do reggaeton? And I'm like, what does that mean? Like, what does that mean? I was up for a commercial the other day, and you know how they forward you emails?
Yeah.
Like, I went through all the emails. And then the beginning email, now this commercial start, a reggaeton start. The brand said, we don't want to see any reggaeton directors. And then so they called me going, hey, you know, because they don't want to see any reggaeton directors. I was like, I'm not a reggaeton
director.
I'm
a film director, sir.
That's what I said.
What you mean?
I'm just like, you know, my reel opens with Robert De Niro and Jennifer Lopez. I'm like, are you going to just because I do reggaeton? I love reggaeton. And
yeah,
I love doing reggaeton.
Like, yeah, yeah.
But the fact that, you know, it's like, man, now our talent is getting so big that all these brands are around them and now they're trying to alienate us.
Yeah. When we're the ones that, like, what?
When you're using our references, you know, and some of these directors in Colombia and Mexico here and there were rocking with these guys when they were, like, performing in front of bodegas.
Yeah, yeah.
And now that they get that, now we're getting pushed out.
Yeah.
You know, so I push the agenda all the time. I support all the directors.
Please do, bro.
You know, and all the directors. Cause people think we got beef, but, like, all the directors, I'm cool with.
It's friendly competition.
Because,
it's business, man.
Because I reach out to them and I talk to them and I tell them, I said, if there's any way that I can help or be a bridge, because at some point those guys need to make the move to Hollywood as well. And they haven't done films or they haven't done television. It's not an easy jump.
Yeah.
You know, but I understand where they come from. I understand how their minds work as a music video director, so I can help be that bridge. And most of them will tell you, I reached out to them and said, hey, if you ever need anything, I'm here.
Tell me how the whole process with El Ganador started. Like, how did this begin? Like, how did you pitch this? You reached out to Nicky. How did this whole thing break down?
The thing is like, you know, I knew Nicky. Like, I knew of Nicky, right? In terms of, like, him being one of the pioneers of reggaeton. Then he had this gap where he disappeared, right? So all of a sudden, he comes back, and he's getting ready to do this music video, so they call me to do it. Enrique Iglesias is on the song, so me and Enrique work a lot. So, you know, to make Enrique comfortable, they was like, okay, he likes to work with Jesse. So we did the video. So during the video, I asked him, like, you know, what happened? Like, you know, and we started talking about his life. Like, where was he at? And he explained the story. And I was like, wow, I never heard such a compelling story. So it was stuck with me. So I told Nicky, I was like, yo, it's, you know, I've been searching for that story in the world of reggaeton, and I feel like I finally heard it. So I was like, it gave me flashbacks because you got a song called El Ganador. We were getting ready to do a video for El Amante.
El Amante.
So Nicky called me to do a video for El Amante. And he had a song called El Ganador. And in that song, it explained like his life. So I told Nicky, I said, look, I got an idea because I feel like, you know, it's like deja vu moment because I felt like we did something very similar. So I said, let's do two videos, right? And let's shoot a video for El Ganador. I'm going to, you know, create it like it's a trailer for the series. So we shot both videos. We shot El Ganador. We made it feel like what the show could potentially feel like. Showed elements of Nicky's life, going to prison, how he was, the addiction, his mom. And then I went to, you know, one of these sort of conventions where they sell television shows and literally took meetings with people. Nicky couldn't make it, so I made a life-size poster of him. So I brought him in the room with me, and then I pressed play. And then as they saw the video, they heard the song, they got a vibe, and then I pitched them what the TV show would be. And that's how we sold it.
Fuck, man. You just got to do it, though. People would have been like, oh, Nicky's not there. Nobody's done this shit before. It's just a trailer, blah, 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 blah. And you close that shit with a trailer. And it wasn't even done yet.
Yeah, it was a music video that felt like what the show could feel like.
Yeah.
And it explained the story enough for me to be able to talk about Nicky in the room and explain the vision of the show. And, you know, the first meeting I had was with Netflix. And they were into it, you know? So we were excited, you know? It was a beautiful thing, you know?
How was that day when it finally premiered? Because I remember I saw that. I was with Michelle, actually, and the rest of the team. We were in France. And at the time, I don't think it was available in the U.S., right? We were watching it in Europe.
That's a complicated story.
Yeah, it was a great show, man. It was a great show. I remember it was all of us in an Airbnb in France, like our whole team sitting down just watching it. And we watched it almost in one sitting. We were just blown away with it. Because, you know, being Latinos, it's really good to see, like, Spanish artists being highlighted in that way and being recognized, especially with what I just told you, which is I grew up listening to hip hop. I grew up seeing this happen. I see that transition happening. And all of a sudden we see a Latino on a Netflix show with an actual, like, really heartfelt story that also encourages young Latinos to make it, because how many people out there, you know, don't have all the opportunities that some of us have, don't have all the education that somebody may be able to want to be able to pursue their career. They're in a really tough situation. There's addictions. They're in a country where they don't have all the resources. But when you see a story like Nicky's and you see all the hardships that he went through and then how you visualize that through your vision, you're able to change the lives of so many people just from them watching it. They don't even have to know who Jesse Terraro is or who Nicky Jam is. They don't even need to know the story of how you put this together. All they have to do is watch. And I think that's incredible, man.
No, I was excited the way the show came out. I think when it first came out, I was a little bit disappointed because it was supposed to be like a double release, you know. So it was Netflix, and then they did a partnership with Telemundo. So Telemundo was supposed to release first in the U.S. and Netflix in the world, and then 6 months later that it would go on Netflix in the U.S. And there were just some complications, and Netflix ended up releasing it as promised, and Telemundo didn't. So. Right. So
I'm glad Netflix released then.
Yeah, they were always going to release it in the world. It was supposed to, you know, the way that the plan was put together was supposed to have a bigger impact.
Right.
Because that was the strategy they used for the Luis Miguel show.
Right, okay.
You know, I just think that, you know, Netflix was really behind the show. They were very excited. And I just think the other partner wasn't accustomed to seeing those kind of people on TV.
I feel you.
And, you know, we were a little bit too edgy.
Must have been stressful, man.
Yeah, we were a little bit too edgy, and I don't think that the casting fits the mold
right
of what they're accustomed people to look like.
Well, look, man, I remember growing up watching all the award shows, especially on the network side. I remember how difficult sometimes it was for urban artists, reggaeton artists, to get some play, man. It would censor the shit out of us. Like, I'm not an artist, but I'm saying us as our people. Like,
no, of course.
It's developed a lot, and it's become a lot more, like, become a lot more flexible and free of what can and can't be done. Because sometimes I go on these award shows now and I listen to some songs that they put as the artist is walking up. That shit, they would have never played that shit 6 years ago, 7 years ago. They wouldn't even allow some artists in the arena before.
No, of course. I mean, you know, you've seen it happen with reggaeton, and you've seen it happen with Mexican regional. You've seen it happen with a lot of those artists used to not want to go to the award shows, right? Because they felt like they weren't being supported. I think right now, even though I'm not a fan of, like, the cancel culture and some of the stuff that goes on, I just think right now it's an interesting time because a lot of these artists are able to use their voice, right? So now they are putting a magnifying glass on some of the stuff that's wrong.
Right.
You know, and you're seeing a lot more diversity and a lot more different types of Latinos on television because you only saw like one type.
One type, yeah.
And if you don't fit into that mold,
and it doesn't work. Yeah.
It doesn't work, you know. And I felt that when I was, you know, pursuing my acting career. You know, I because to them, because I was a darker skinned Latino, I only fit the mold of like the criminal and the drug dealer. Like they were never gonna put me in anything that was positive.
Right.
Because in their minds, the darker Latinos are go a little bit more urban or street.
Yeah.
Right. And the fair-skinned Latinos, they get the better roles at that time. I'm not saying that still exists.
At that time, not anymore, yeah.
But I just think that right now we're seeing a lot more because people are, like, standing up more.
Yeah.
And there's a lot, there's been a lot more change, which is great.
And you're part of that growth as Jesse and as Cinema Giants. So talk to me about Cinema Giants. Obviously, everybody knows Jesse, but Jesse is not a one-man show. Jesse has an entire business and a ton of professionals working with him. Tell me about Cinema Giants.
You know, for me, the company was always named after myself, right? So it was always like, you know, and maybe that was my ego at one point. And it was like Torero Films or Torero Digital. And things would happen in the industry, right? So I would work with a lot of companies. I would work with a lot of brands. And what would happen sometimes is I would do like the Latin content for them. And then somebody would be like, oh, man, this content was so great. We should have them do some of the general market stuff. And then someone might type up like, Torero, whatever, might catch a picture of me at some nightclub at Liv or something,
yeah,
and be like,
"Ooh,
like this guy doesn't understand the general market," you know. Like, and then I felt like the company was being judged by who I was, you know. And I feel like I'm a good person or whatever, but I'm just saying, it was also being judged by like the you know, the color of my skin and so many things that they were trying to put me in a box. So one day I was like, "Look, I want to build a company that doesn't feel Latin or doesn't feel urban." And then I was just frustrated. I was hiking. And I was like, you know what? One day I'm going to come through Hollywood and I'm going to stomp through like a giant, you know? And I was like, you know, then I was like, Cinema Giants. We're Cinema Giants. Because, so then it stuck to me. And then I started looking on the internet. Nobody had the name. So I bought it, you know, did the copyright. And then I was like, you know, I wanted to build like the Yankees of music video directors, right? So it's like, I wanted to go out and find the best talent and put together the best squad so that we would have a mission where the same way that I went through struggles because I didn't have nobody in front of me. Like there was no other Dominican director that I could call, a Latin director that was doing stuff in Hollywood that I could pick up the phone and say, hey, all this is happening to me. What do I do? Right. And, you know, on the African-American side, John Singleton sat with me, F. Gary Gray. They would come visit me like, hey, I know you're going through stuff. We went through stuff. So you had that. But on the Latin side, we didn't have that. And I felt like, you know, I wanted to do that for younger directors and create a path. And show them that there's more than music video, you know? And if you want to sustain a career, you got to jump. It's like music video is like high school.
Yeah.
You know, you got to graduate. You got to move into the real world.
You got to make that shift.
Because I tell them, I said, some music video directors don't entertain me for 3 minutes. So how are they going to entertain me for an hour and a half or 2 hours? So it's like the pace
or a series, or a Netflix series.
It's tough, man. It's tough. Everybody thought I was crazy when I did El Ganador because we shot it. Normally, you try to shoot a series in order. But because of Nikki's schedule shifted, we started with episode 6, not even shooting episode 1. And we had to blend all his episodes. So it was like, oh, right now we're in episode 6. No, episode 8. Take the tattoo off. No, he's fat. He's on drugs. Like, we were flipping through it. So when people started seeing the footage, they were like, yo, Jesse's crazy.
Yo, you're on some shit, Jesse.
And we don't know
fuck?
What this looks like. Everybody was nervous, you know, because all 13 episodes were blended. Until the first day, I sent that first episode out, and Netflix was like, wow.
God, bro. I wouldn't even know where to start, man.
It's crazy, you know? But yeah, you know, but for Cinema Giants, I'm excited, man. I'm excited at the growth. I'm excited at the team that we're putting together. I'm excited at, you know, it's a struggle. It's a struggle, but we're, you know, for me, I feel like we're fighting for something, so it's good.
Can you just imagine, like, little Jesse with his camera back home, like, super young, seeing the shit that you're doing now, or even you as a teenager, right? Because for me, like, I remember when I was in high school, there's so many things that I want to do, and now in my 20s, I'm doing some of them, and, like, I feel grateful, like, and I feel like, shit, man, like, I really wanted to do this, and I did it. Like, there is a way, right? But so many people think they can't, and it's like, why, right? Like, how are we sitting here in Miami right now at More Play Studios, Rich Music, with Jesse Torero? How is all of this happening? It's just, like, identify who you want to work with, identify how they work, identify how you could bring value always, and just get in there and get that shit done. And bro, you've gotten that shit done, but more than what you've done, I want to talk about what you're looking to do. Because you are, like I said, making strides in film. You have Cinema Giants. What is Cinema Giants looking like, let's say, year 2035? What would you guys like to be working on? What is your vision like, man?
2035. Right? I'm old already. But look, I think for me, just, you know, we have a lot of projects in development. You know, I would love to talk about some of them, but...
I saw you posting with Maluma yesterday.
Yeah, yeah, we just shot something. But, you know, even me and Maluma have conversations about the big screen, right?
Right.
And he just did the movie with Jennifer Lopez. And, you know, we talk about projects and, you know, I would love to do something with him on the film side. He's extremely talented. Me and Nikki literally had dinner last night and we were having a conversation.
He's a businessman, man. He's on it.
Nikki's incredible, man. And you know, he's one of the guys that sees the vision, right? So sometimes, you know, the music artists, they don't see the vision in film, right? But, you know, but Nikki, his heart is in it. You know, his passion is there for acting. So we're discussing a lot of other projects to do. But for me, it's, you know, we're developing a bunch of stuff, some more life right stuff, you know, and just trying to develop projects that I feel like empower our culture, right? And since there's not a lot of stuff out there, we're missing everything.
Yeah.
Action movies, comedies, TV series, romantic comedies. We're missing so much stuff that we're just out there trying to find the right ideas, the right projects, partner with the right writers. And literally, you know, we're Zoom pitches almost every day.
Yeah.
And we're just pitching away, you know, and trying to set these things up. And I feel like very excited because I think next year we're going to have some new stuff coming.
Yeah. So obviously you're a busy dude. Your team's very busy. What percentage of your time do you say you spend either learning or consuming content that's already out there?
Not enough.
Not enough.
Not enough. That's how I feel. But I try, you know, I try, but there's so much stuff out, you know.
And people pitching you shit, Alex calling you to be on the podcast,
It's tough. So I try. I don't sleep much. So I try, but it's usually really late at night.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, and I try to consume because you want to see what's out there. You want to see what's working.
Or who's behind it or like what's going
on. Yeah. Right now we have the ability that we can watch a show like Casa de Papel. We can watch a show from another part of the world, right? So it's not about just what's happening in the U.S. anymore.
Squid Games, man.
Exactly. Wow. I haven't watched that yet, so don't spoil it. But, you know, we're getting all this content now that we didn't get because everything was regional, right? We were getting stuff just for the U.S. And only maybe in the Oscars we found out that there was this movie in Europe that did really well. So now we're able to see things that are happening in Mexico, Spain, Colombia, here and there, and exposed to different filmmakers. So I try to watch as much as I can, you know. And so that I can at least understand what's happening in the world.
Jesse, one final question, bro. How do you want to be remembered, man?
You know, that's tough. I mean, look, I want to be remembered by somebody that's a tough one.
It is.
It's a tough one. But like, I feel like, you know, I want to be remembered for the inspiration I gave others. Right. I think that, you know, everything I do it for the right reason, you know, and for the right cause. And I've been pushing that agenda in the land space. And I feel like I want to be remembered like that, as somebody that really cared about our genre, about our people, and made it my mission statement for my career.
And you definitely put a stamp on the industry. Guys, this is Alex Quinn, Jesse Terrero, Hustle Inspires Hustle Podcast at More Play Studios. We'll catch you guys on the next episode. Thank you, Jesse.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of the Hustle Inspires Hustle Podcast. I'd appreciate it if you could share, leave a review, and subscribe to the show. Visit hustleinspireshustle.com/app for more free resources, event invitations, and online courses to empower your personal and financial success. Learn about marketing, finances, business development, branding, strategic partnerships, and much more. If you're looking to further connect, check me out on Instagram or LinkedIn at Alex Quinn. That's AlexQuin. See you on the next episode.